And what you would do is you would randomly draw a card. We would each pick one out. And like a jack would be a bend, like a bow, and then like a king would be like a slide or something, and then like a one would be like a dent, and then a three would be a dent. So we just drew cards and threw the cards on the floor, and then that's how Middle Fingers Up was written. We just drew cards.
Use EMG pickups because they help you get the heaviest tone possible. Head over to emgpickups.com and use my promo code HEAVY at checkout and get 15% off. And then once you write the heaviest song of all time, head over to distrokid.com/VIP/Garza and save 30% off your membership to get all your songs on all streaming platforms. And now to the heaviest podcast of all time. Well, thank you for the White Claws. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And also, this is, Franz, this is to you and your band Attila, and congratulations for 10 years.
Thank you so much.
About that life.
Cheers. Thank you.
You guys come a long way, man. Like when that record came out, like, I remember, like, it was a combination of, like, people that loved it, obviously loved it, but then you have, like, the opposite reaction, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of opposite. I would say it was more the opposite. When the album came out, it was the most hated album of all time, according to like 15, 20 different major rock news outlets. And that was my first time experiencing like mass hate. So it was kind of a learning experience because I was like, damn, like I really like what I made, but the whole world says this is the worst album in all of humanity. And then it was funny because all the negative press turned into positive press because 3 months later it became like the biggest album ever. Mm-hmm. And everyone was stoked to see it. And Kevin Lyman was begging us to headline Warped Tour and just all this shit. It was like, okay, so I guess all the hate turned into something good.
Yeah.
And it did.
At that point, did you have thick skin yet?
I would say yes, I did, because I've been like famous since I was like 16 from being on MTV Made, so I've been used to people just like digging into me. I had thick skin, but in the musical sense, I'd never had that much like flack musically in my life.
Yeah.
But I did have thick skin, and I was like, also, I was young. I was like 23, so I was at the age where it's like it doesn't matter what anyone says. It's just like, fuck you, eat shit. You could tell me anything. Fuck you. I'm going to double down and go crazy.
You got to double down.
Yeah.
I think people deep down and on a primal level, they like when you double down on shit.
Yeah, they do.
They don't fucking want you to just bitch out, dude.
If you bitch out and back down, then it's like, okay, you just admitted that you suck.
Mm-hmm. True.
Double down, it's like, damn, all right, we got to fight this guy now.
You know what? I didn't even think when you were on MTV Made, you were younger. You were still in high school. And I didn't even think about
I was 16.
Like, how you handled that.
So that was wild. I mean, just being famous as a 16-year-old is just a wild thing to happen. So, you know, obviously people would say things or whatever, and being on the show itself, like I was like a chubby metal kid that got made into a model, so they kind of tore into me on that. I always tell people what you don't know, but before you go on reality TV, they make you do like a really comprehensive like psychiatric test to make sure that you're not going to kill yourself, because they're going to like drill into you and like try to, you know, get under your skin. So you have to pass like a really crazy psychiatric test before you're even allowed to go on a reality TV show.
How old are you again?
16.
You went through that when you were 16?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to handle that. I would have crumbled that, and there...
There I am.
You were a little chubby kid.
Oh, yeah, I was a chubby kid. Look at me.
My goodness, dude. And now look how far you come. Still, you dealt with everything. And you know what, Franz, you did? I think if you go through that kind of mental evaluation, emotional evaluation, I wouldn't have got through that, and you did, that, and that's something to be proud of.
Thank you, thank you.
And you're still you.
Yeah, so I guess I've been dealing with spotlight, fame, whatever you want to call it, from an early age, and you know, I The critics and all that stuff doesn't really bother me. You could say anything you want. If anything, I'd prefer like a comfortable medium of 50% hate, 50% love, because I think that's kind of what keeps you really in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
If it's all love, then it's just cool. No one cares. If it's all hate, then no one cares. But when you got that 50-50 balance of love and hate, I think it keeps people talking about you and helps you grow.
Yeah. And you always understood that. Like, you understood there was, like, an entertainment factor.
Yeah.
You know? Not a lot of people do. Because like, musicians tend to be, like, they're really good at the one thing. Like, the one thing. Whether it's being a singer or a drummer, a bass, guitar player, et cetera.
Yeah.
But they just lack everything else. Like, let's say a business. or, like, you know, how do you get out there, you know? It's a whole other hat to wear.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you seem to collect all the hats when you were a very young age. You know, you founded, you know, Attila.
Yeah.
You know, you found four friends from high school and then just went from there.
Yep. And here we are. You know, a lot of work, but I think what I have that a lot of people don't is a good like business ethic mindset. I think a lot of people are just strictly musicians only and they don't understand anything about business. So having the knowledge of both is definitely helpful to our career.
Where did you get that from?
Honestly, I can take my glasses off. I'll be a normal person. dude, I have no idea because it's not even in my family. I think my family just always pushed me to like be the best and I never got – it's like – I grew up in a family where, like, you don't get a fucking trophy unless you win. And if you don't win, fuck you, do better. Like, you can win. So mm-hmm. I got pushed really hard. Like, kind of opposite of the way people raise their kids nowadays, where it's like, oh, you got last place. Here's a trophy. It's like, no, fuck you, dude. You suck. Like, get better. Like, if you want to do this, like, let's practice more. But ever since a young age, I just have always been an entrepreneur. I started selling golf balls when I was 7 years old.
No.
Yeah, so my dad worked at a grocery store. Sick. My grandpa worked at a golfing range. So my grandpa would bring a giant trash bag of golf balls. We got some Santa Ana murders going on. Jeez,
someone's getting robbed outside. It's fine.
All right, that's awesome. So my grandpa would bring over like a giant trash bag of golf balls, and my dad would bring from the grocery store empty egg cartons, and I would sort them based on what brand they were, the quality of the golf ball, everything. And I lived in like a poor middle neighborhood, but next to me was a rich neighborhood. So I would drag my wagon at 7 years old to the rich neighborhood. And I would look in the garages to see which garages had golf bags. And I would just hustle golf balls. And I had like a subscription service at age 7 where I would hand deliver golf balls to you once a month. So I was just like making money and hustling since I was 7. And it progressed into so many different things.
Do you think you got that from your parents? Because if you have parents that really push you in the what's the word like the positive way, but don't baby you, like there's like this weird like.
My parents definitely helped me in the fact that they like didn't baby me, but they're not entrepreneurs. You know, they're regular. So I don't know. I don't have like an entrepreneur in my family except me. It's just. Just happened. I just had the drive to do it. Just happened.
And you literally applied that into your
everything teens, I do in life.
Everything. So this started when you were a child.
Literally a child. And then after that, I started a lawn care business where my strategy was I would go to all the houses that had like really overgrown lawns. I would put my mower in the front yard, turn it on. Turn everything on and then knock on the door and they'd be like, what the hell? And then they'd see me like as like a, that's probably when I was like 9, they'd see like a 9-year-old kid in their front yard with the lawnmower already turned on. And I would just be like, hey, I'm here to mow your lawn and it's $20 and my lawnmower's already on. And then like 9 times out of 10, they would just grab a 20 and hand it to me.
Dang,
and
dude,
so I was
sick.
Just a hustler, you know what I mean? Like,
sick. It's smart when you already have it on. It's kind of like, hey, I mean, I turn it on, so it's like, can you just
I gotta
give me
do
20
it.
Bucks?
Also, you know your lawn sucks because you haven't mowed it in like 2 months. So just give me fucking $20, dude. It worked every time.
Do you think people can still approach the door-to-door thing now?
I think people could still do stuff like that. I just think that people are just stupidly fucking lazy now. Like, I don't think
people are lazy.
I think the younger generation just wants to like look at TikToks all day. Like, why would you go hustle and make money when you could just, you know, look at TikTok? I didn't have anything like that. Like, I might have had like a PS1, like, I don't know, like something shitty to do, but like, I already was bored of video games. I wanted to make money.
Yeah.
Get shit done.
It's funny because most singers are really into video games for some reason, and you weren't.
No, you're right.
And you weren't.
I mean, I like video games, but I'm just like an average player. Like, I play like an average amount of time as anyone does. I'm not like a super nerd like some people when it comes to video games.
Yeah, so I'll get a PS1 and get Tiger Woods, you know, 2001, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I did, so that's why I'm saying it.
I was out there playing Destruction Derby and shit.
Boom.
And oh, wait, who's controlling this, by the way?
It's Jay. Jerry.
Oh, behind there?
Yeah.
So everything that's talked about, you're just pulling up shit?
Boom.
Oh, that's so cool. Fuck yeah.
Constantly.
I like this. This is cool. I've never done this before.
What
I'm a virgin.
Oh, yeah, it did come out in year 2000. About a good... And they put Tiger Woods on every golf game for PlayStation.
Oh, yeah, you had to.
He was sick, dude.
Tiger Woods is the GOAT, man.
He was. So naturally... You're just not lazy. A lot of people are, dude.
Well, I just know that if you want something, you have to get it. Like, there's no such thing as luck. There's no such thing as, like, shit just falling on your plate. Mm-hmm. Yep, that was my game, bro. Destruction fucking Derby, dude.
I never seen this.
Oh, it was fire. Derby. All you did was just crash into people and kill them. Like, it was great. It was epic.
So basically, your day as a child, you'll play this for about 5 minutes, and then you'll go out.
And make money.
And they'll...
Yeah, yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah, I play a little Destruction Derby. I didn't really have many friends growing up either. Like, honestly, I mean, it's not that I wasn't social because I could talk to anyone. It was just like, I just didn't have a lot of friends, man. I would hang out by myself and just figure out ways to make money. Yeah, look, you just crash. Like, it's graphics are total dog shit, but it was just cool.
These graphics are terrible.
You just crash. Like, that's all I wanted to do is just crash cars.
Well, what you are living is video game. You just want to go fast.
Huh?
And it's crash.
Yeah.
let's fucking ride it till the wheels just crash off. You know?
Yeah, you'd be in a big circle just smashing each other up. Oh, God. Oh, this is bringing me back.
So you're hustling lawns. You didn't have, like your one or two good best friends on like the same block you hung out with, like anything like that?
I had like one or two.
Yeah.
That was it.
That was it?
Yeah. Just one or two.
But what was it like consistent or?
I would say it was consistent, but there was like 1 year. Actually, only a few people know this. This is pretty sad, but there's probably like 1 or 2 years of my life where I didn't have a single friend at all, like zero. But it was cool because what I did during that time period is I kind of just put my head in books and I just read a lot. I got like real, I like leveled up. I was like, I don't have any friends because something happened where I only had like one friend and then me and that one friend had a falling out. And keep in mind, this is like probably like middle school days. Like, you know, we're talking like 7, 8, 9 years old. It's probably around there. But I had a full year where I didn't have one single friend, like not one, but I just... put my head in books and listened to music and just got smart and figured shit out.
So you were seven, eight, nine, you said?
Yeah, sometime around that period, like probably. I had a full year where I didn't have a single friend, like not one, like nobody.
That is sad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be depressing because I wasn't sad about it. I was just like, I'm kind of like a nerd. I was just like, cool, I'm just going to read books all year. I just leveled up.
You were reading books before you were 10.
Yeah.
Dude, that is extremely advanced.
Because I came from like a nerdy family, I guess, on my dad's side at least. Like, they would just only buy me books for Christmas. Like, the other side of the family might give me video games. This side just will give me a book. So I'm like, gotta read this shit.
What'd you read?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
That was the first book I ever read. I was like too young to read it, but I just... figured it out and fell in love, and then obviously there's fucking like what 10 of them.
Yeah, there's like a series, right? I'm not familiar with the Harry Potter.
So I had like the whole fucking thing. There's so many. So and they're giant. Some of the books are a little thin. Some of them are a little thick. So like I could I could read for years. So
did you own that?
That yeah, I owned the whole set. So that year I didn't have friends. Dork, I probably read through all of that of quite a few times, and you know I'm just getting my vocabulary up, just getting my smarts up, man.
So, do you taught yourself how to read?
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you understand what these books meant? What you were reading, or you're just saying, "Oh, this is a cool story. I'm just gonna follow it." Best I can, or
I mean, like I said, I was probably like 9, so I don't think that's unreasonable to read at like age 9. Is that like 9, 10?
Like, you know how they have like the what's that called? Like the grade reading level, where it's like 4th grade reading level, 5th grade reading level.
Oh yeah.
What is the Harry Potter books? Is that what grade reading level is that? I want to say
that is a good question.
I want to say that's like middle school, high school.
All right, 9 to 12 years old.
Oh shit!
So there we go. So it's not out of the reach. Also, I don't know if you know. So you know that I was a chubby kid growing up, mm-hmm. and everyone remembers that in school, the more books you read, you got free personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut.
That's the rumor.
It's not a rumor. That was my life I lived. So the more fucking books I read, bro, the more free pizza I got. And I was a chubby kid with no friends. So I read all the fucking books and I got all the free personal pan pizzas, bro. I tricked the system.
So that's really why we're reading.
I mean, kind of, but also I just liked reading because I just like to fuck off. Like lock my door and just read a book in a day. Just be a little nerd.
And imagine that like back then, like there's nothing to distract you.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I don't have any friends hitting me up. It's just me and my book and my personal pan pizza, dog.
That's a you know, this sadness might turn into like a happy story because that sounds a pretty like a nice life.
Maybe it'll inspire people. Like worry less about what people like worry less about the internet and TikTok and just read a book and get a personal pan pizza. You'll mm-hmm. get smarter and your belly is gonna be happy.
It's crazy how you just took that and ran with it, dude.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I guess, sucks in a way that in order to kind of make any kind of major leap in your life as far as either your career or what you want to do, you kind of need to go away for a while from friends,
yeah.
I notice. And it's been like a really hard thing to deal with, even especially if you get older. You want to do something. For us, it's like you're either like making a record or something. You got to kind of have to like disappear.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I was feel bad because then you can't like build on your relationships, you know, and then it makes it kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's like you'll forget birthdays, and then you feel bad that they might feel bad that like you forgot about them. It's like this weird thing when you have your mind set on something, that's fucking it. And
yeah.
if you're not married or kids, like nothing else really matters. It's like a weird thing.
Also, being on tour just makes life difficult because you do, like, forget friends' birthdays and shit.
Dude,
and
sucks.
You know, you're not around enough. So, like, the more you go on tour, the less you get invited to do shit. Because mm-hmm. all it takes is, like, 2 invites. Like, bro, like, come to my birthday party. Sorry, I'm on tour. Like, bro, come here. Like, sorry, I'm on tour. And then they don't hit you up a third time.
No. It's like 1, 2, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell people, like, all the time, like, hey, hit me up like seriously like 10 or more times. I know it sounds stupid, but like there'll be one time where it hits. We're like, hey, I'll go down the street for like a beer and like a pizza. You know, it's like I have like a good like hour or two like block I could just leave.
Yeah.
You know, because your brain wants to try to plan. It wants to hang out. But when there's like a reality of time.
You're just going to be busy.
Yeah, is it? You know, it sucks, dude. It sucks.
It's better to be busy than not busy, though.
It is. So we did a tour together. It was Rage Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also the first one was All Stars.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about that.
Okay.
Also, because I don't know. I'm pretty sure I've told you and everyone I talk about it a lot, but
mm-hmm.
Mitch changed my life. And no one else has done, like for me as a vocalist, what Mitch did for me. So I wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for Mitch. Because that first tour we did together, the All Stars, I was the baby band on the tour, the opener. You guys were the headliner. Yeah. We were the lowest band. Suicide Silence was the highest band. Suicide Silence, like, that was my favorite band in the world. And I knew, like, I'm never going to meet the guys. I'm never going to hang out with them probably. They're headlining in the bus. I'm in the little van. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah. I mean, it might have been even earlier than 2012, I think. It might have been even earlier, but I just remember like hanging out with you guys and you were all so cool, and Mitch saw me and kind of like grabbed me and was like, "Come here, dude. Drink a beer with me." And I'm like, I'm like, "What do you mean? Like, I'm the opening band. Like, why are you being nice to me, you know?" Like, yeah. And he was just like, "I fucking love you, dude. Come here." And like, he would always every day be like, "Come to the bar with me." And we would just talk. And like, my like young mind was just blown that my idol was like nice, because they always say, don't meet your idols. Like, mm-hmm. they're all bad. Mm-hmm. And Mitch was my idol. And he was so fucking nice. And every day, you remember on that tour, I rode on your bus more than I rode in my van.
Yeah.
Just because every fucking day, Mitch would be like, I was trying to be like respectful and be like, let me go back in my van. And he's like, no, we have extra bunks. You're sleeping in here. And I'm like, what? I've never been in a bus before. What the fuck is this?
Wow.
Every day he would take me under his wing, take me to bars with him. And I was like, I felt really bad too, because I was like, man, like, I don't have any money to my name. Like, I want to go to the bar with you, but like, I can't afford like to drink three beers. Like, I can't, I don't have any money. And Mitch was like, dude, I got you every day. And everything he told me and the way he acted basically set an example for me for how I act to all bands opening tours for Attila now. I'll never forget. Like, and if I ever catch myself slightly being a dickhead, I'll just close my eyes and think of Mitch, because he changed my life and had such a big impact on me. And I want to be that person for other bands where it's like, Attila's headlining, but they're not dickheads. He gave me beers. He hung out with me. He showed me respect when he didn't have to. But it just showed like he was a good human being, like legitimately a super fucking good human being down to the core of his being. And I'll never forget that. Like, I think about it all the time. Like, every time Halloween comes up, I get sad.
Yeah, Halloween kind of sucks.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it sucks.
It makes me sad, like, because that guy changed my life, straight up.
Did he tell you anything, or did, what did you learn? Like, what sticks out?
I would say, like, I mean, just watching him every night and the way he commanded the crowd and what he did with his presence, it was just so commanding, like just watching and observing. But I think more than anything, what I learned from him was just on a personal, like human to human level. Like, he taught me like what it is to be a good human. Cause it was kind of in that point where like Attila was gaining popularity. And like, even though we were just the baby opening band, it's kind of like, it was setting me up to where like I could kind of start getting that like little ego. And then Mitch instantly just like reset me and put me down to ground zero and was like, be a good human, be a good person. And I was like, holy shit, like, this is crazy. It was more just, he taught me like what it is to be a good human. And when you do rise to the top, how to be a good human to other people.
Yeah.
Cause most people aren't, let's face it. Like, there's a lot of big bands that aren't necessarily like actual good humans. But he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he just knew how to balance that, like, healthy ego with being himself.
Yeah, he kept the ego on the stage.
Yeah, he just knew he had that balance on lock. It was fucking crazy to see.
Yeah. He kept the ego on stage, took over the whole crowd, but then the second he got off the stage, he was just your best friend. The guy that would just give poor little me that couldn't afford a beer. And be like, come hang out with me. Like, I just want to talk to you. I enjoy your presence. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
That's sick.
No one's ever been this nice to me. So, I don't know. I learned a lot from him.
That's cool, man. That was his last tour.
Yeah, I know. Because we talked every single day. After that tour, we talked every single day. And he literally told me, like, bro, I'm so fucking excited right now. We just got our big check from Nuclear Blast. And we talked about everything, like, on the phone every day. He's like, we just got our big check from Nuclear Blast. He's like, I'm fucking hyped. The first thing I'm going to do, I'm going straight to Harley.
That's what he did.
I'm going to buy the most expensive bike they have in the store. Like, he talked to me every day. That's exactly what he told me. And I was like, fuck yeah, man. I was like, if that's what your heart wants, I was like, bikes scare me. But that's, if that's your thing, I love you. Go for it, bro. And I mean, we just talked every day. And also our next tour was supposed to be together.
Was it?
Yeah. So our next tour was also together. So we did the summer tour, and then in the fall, I believe it was Asking Alexandria.
You guys were on that?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. We were the opener for that tour too. It was like Asking Alexandria and As I Lay Dying, and then Look, Suicide Silence.
Oh shit, you were on that.
Well, Look to the Flyer. Yeah, see? Yeah, we were on that tour. So like that's why.
What the fuck? I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, man. So me and Mitch became like best friends on the tour we did together. And then after that tour ended, we talked every single day, all the time, because we were stoked because we were going back on the road again. So we're like, fuck yeah, we get to hang again. And then we were on another tour during October of this year. I forget what it was, but I'll never forget. I was in San Antonio, Texas. We were staying at someone's house. It was Halloween. I went to bed and someone shook me and woke me up and told me what happened, and I was just crying all day. And that was like the only time that I think I almost like canceled a show, because I just couldn't hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
Like I couldn't, like it was hard for me to play that day.
It was fucking terrible. It's funny, like just as the years go on, and it's been only 10 years now. You hear like stories like this, like damn, I don't forget who he was, but it's like damn, it's just that the impact. It's just crazy.
I have goosebumps right now. Like I'm not even joking at all. Like no one has impacted my life more than he did. And it's like we didn't get to hang out that much, but the time we did have together, he fucking just completely changed the way I think about everything. Mm. I'd probably be a total dick right now if it wasn't for him. And I know people still think I'm a dick, but sure. Like, you know, I've got that like inner Mitch in me. Like I've got the Mitch on my shoulder where it's like, hey, be nice to that opening band. Like, you know, yeah. Go give them a fucking case of beer. You have too much on your bus. Mm. What would Mitch do? Give them the fucking case of beer. Damn. Be nice. Shake their hands. Be kind. Mm-hmm. That's what he would do.
True.
So it's like, I like having him with me, I guess, in spirit.
He is. Do you think that you're misunderstood? Because it's to me,
highly.
I mean, from like the outside looking in, all you know, all we have is like a tour together couple, and then you see like these headlines. It makes me think like, I think he says misunderstood, and people just don't get it.
People don't get it. Also, I think when it comes to like headlines and stuff, I think that people use me essentially, because they know that if there's any headline that has to do with me or has my name in it, mm-hmm. the clicks are just so much higher. Mm-hmm. And I could just look at it. Like I can look at the Loudwire Instagram or the, you know, sure. Revolver or whatever, and it's yeah. like they'll post all this shit that gets such low engagement, and then the second they fucking post me, it boosts up, and I get what it is. It's kind of like they're gaining from me, even if they're not saying good things about me. But
mm-hmm.
honestly, I would say as far as like the present goes, the past year for Attila has been phenomenal. So it has been mm-hmm. nothing but good press. But you know, there's always something going on. I think like right now the biggest press I got like this month is me announcing that I'm gonna become the next president. So
how's that going?
That got a lot of press. It's going good. It's just a lot of work, man, because I'm on tour right now. So like my campaign manager is trying to like prep our campaign and shit and like get us going. But I'm just on tour, so it's like I can't really like necessarily focus on like what I have to do. So, but it's good. It's interesting.
Franz, I think you're ready.
Yeah,
you're ready, man. You have thick skin.
Yeah,
you know.
I'm good. I'm like I think that the reason I would be a good president just comes down to the fact that I don't even like politics. I hate it. So I'm not even trying to like do what all these other fuckers do. Like I'm just trying to do what's good for people like me and you and everyone watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there needs to be a real like human being president, not like a businessman or not a puppet or not like a 90-year-old like dead man that is just, we don't even know what's going on anymore. Like mm-hmm. we just need a real person. And I actually make everyone's like, you're not old enough to be president, Franz. And I'm like, actually, well, technically, I turn the right age 2 months before the deadline. So I'll be 2 months past the deadline to be president, and I'd be the youngest president in history.
Because you're 33 now, right?
Yeah.
So what's the age?
You got to be 35 by January 20th, 2025. So I'll be...
I know it's that young.
2 months past, yeah.
Who's the youngest president?
Not 35, but I would be...
Who, okay, type in youngest president
in the world. That wouldn't work.
US.
Yeah, Theodore Roosevelt, 42. And then even John F. Kennedy was a young one, but he was 43, so...
42, 43, yeah. Wow.
I would be 35 and 2 months old, so I'd be the youngest president ever. So I just think it'd be good to have someone young and more in touch with, like, what people want. And also, like, politically, I just hate, like... I don't even like talking about politics, just to be real, but I hate the whole, like, you got to be, like, super far left or super far right. Mm-hmm. The reality is... We're humans, and most of us don't fall super far left or super far right. We're kind of in the middle. Like, we kind of back both sides and believe in both things, like, to a degree of each mm-hmm. party. So, like, yeah. having this, like, you got to be, like, far this or far that, I just hate that shit. So, I just support being a libertarian, and I think it's just, like, people don't realize, like, people are like, what are libertarian? You kind of explain, it's like, oh shit, that's me. It's like, yeah, like, we're all secretly believing in that, but it's just, we never get a running shot to be president. So hopefully mm-hmm. it'll change soon, because I just think the two-party system is just kind of, like, fucking shit up, and I think people are over it, because it's mm-hmm. it's just like a pendulum swinging that just pisses the whole world off.
Yeah. Yeah. Most humans are balanced. Like, they're just, like, in the middle somewhere, you know?
Yeah, but there's nothing that represents the middle. So why, like, all right, vote for me, bitch. Let's go.
Okay, then, so to close off this subject, what is the first thing you're going to do as President Franz?
I would say it's pretty easy. The first thing I'm going to do is make marijuana federally legal, like, countrywide. It's so stupid not to. I heard the cheers. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's like the easiest no-brainer. Just make marijuana federally legal, and also mm-hmm. just be fair and release people that have been in prison 10 years or 15 years because they had a fucking joint or, like, a small bag of weed. Like, shut up. Like, release these people. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of just unfairness, but yeah.
There is. I mean, I'm not calling myself, like, a good person by any means, but, you know, I have, like, I have mushrooms in my bunk currently.
Uh-oh.
I'm not, like, a...
You're going to jail, dude.
I know. But it's just, like, such a... It's weird, because, like, I'm not, like, yeah, it's, like, my guys, I don't do mushrooms. This is my first time. I'm 37.
Oh, you've never done mushrooms?
No.
Oh, dude. Okay.
So, but it's such a fucked up thought. Like, I'm trying to do this to be like, okay, let's get some insight, try to be the better person. But but it pisses me off. I'm like, wait, if I get caught with this, it'll be so silly. That, like, if anything would happen to me, all Garza caught with mushrooms? What the fuck? And why? I was trying to be like a better person. I don't know.
So I'm not a psychedelic person by any means. Mm-hmm. I've tripped on mushrooms once, like a full-blown trip, mm-hmm. and I got really scared and then really happy, but I absolutely love microdosing mushrooms.
That's
where you take, like, less than half a gram.
Yeah.
Because a full dose is going to be, like, 3.5, like an eighth.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, don't do it. I mean, you could do it if you want. If you want to have, like, if you're in, like, the woods or somewhere cool around your friends,
yeah.
Sure, go on an enlightenment trip, but... Dude, microdosing mushrooms is probably the best thing you could do. Because if you take less than half a gram, what I do is at home, I've got mushroom chocolates that are divided like a Hershey bar.
Sick.
And if you just take one little square off that chocolate, that's a microdose. Literally, a microdose of shrooms, you won't trip at all. You'll barely feel anything. The only mm-hmm. thing that'll happen is you're just going to smile more all day for no fucking reason. That's it.
Yeah.
You won't trip. You're just going to smile more and laugh more, and you just won't even know why, and mm-hmm. you won't feel like you're tripping, but it just makes you enjoy life better in the moment and smile more and laugh more. That's it. Nice. Microdose. Do it.
Microdose is sick. I don't count that as the trip, but I have done that a couple of times. And someone put on Daddy from Korn. And that's the sickest thing ever. It was like, damn, if you hear nu metal when you're tripping or a little bit of some, it's pretty sick. It's pretty fucking sick, man.
Right. Here we go. TNT. This is the other good flavor out of pack, too.
So just to make it people aware, so About That Life, that's your fifth record or fourth?
Fuck. I forgot. Google
it's
it.
It's fifth. Okay, so.
No, it's either fourth or fifth because we kind of don't count.
You don't count the first one,
we
huh?
We kind of don't count Fallacy, but that should count. So, I mean, I count it personally. So one, two, three, four. Oh, wait, it was pulled up. One, two, three, four.
So this is how I counted.
There it is. One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, so I say fifth, but I think it's just like I'm the only person that did Fallacy.
Mm-hmm. I think it counts.
Yeah, same. So, yeah, no, fifth. About That Life's our fifth album. Came out in 2013, and now we are celebrating 10 years of About That Life. The tour is almost done. I think we've got like 2 weeks left, maybe a little less, but the tour has been incredible. Probably one of our best tours in the past like 5-6 years, easily, hands down. Great lineup, great people on the tour, but overall it's just a lot of people that are stoked about an album that changed their life 10 years ago, for better or the worse.
Mostly for the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people don't like your band, who cares?
Oh, I don't care at all. If you don't like my band, just talk about us. And that's what people do. They don't realize, like, I almost missed that mic flip.
Sick.
I almost fucked that shit up. People don't realize, like, if you don't like someone and you want them to go away, just shut up. Don't talk about them. But the second you start talking about them more, even if it's in a hateful way, you're just reminding everyone about us. And a lot of the people that are reading your shit don't realize that they actually do fuck with us and like us. Mm-hmm. So you're helping us.
Yeah.
It's kind of like reminds me, okay, here we go. Here's going to be the news headline because Buddy Nielsen just did his thing. Here's something that Buddy Nielsen doesn't know. When we played Warped Tour together and he dedicated his set to talking shit about Attila, they would have like 25 minutes and like 15 of it was just talking shit about me. What he doesn't know, I made so much money on that tour from him because people would come to my tent and say, I never heard of your band until Buddy Nielsen from Senses Failed did a speech talking shit about you. So I ran to the stage to see what was so bad about. I ran to your stage to see what was so bad about you. And I fell in love with your band and your music and your charisma. And so I had to buy your shirts. So I don't think he knows that, but he helped me so much because every single day someone would come up to me and say, never heard of you. I fucking never heard of Attila or Franz, but Buddy Nielsen kept talking about you and I had to see why you were so fucking bad and I fucking love your music and I bought a shirt and I bought a Stay Sick shirt too and I'm here to hang out. And it's like, I'm like, dude, hate is so nice. It helps so much. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. But yeah, no, I haven't talked to Buddy in years, and apparently, according to the podcast he just did, we squashed the beef. So I'm cool with that. I don't care at all. I love everyone, and I told Buddy to his face when I first met him that I love Senses Fail and grew up listening to his music and appreciate what he does. And I mean, I don't care. I also don't hold grudges, and I'm not a negative person, so I don't even have any negative bones in my body. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, you can't have grudges, man.
No, not at all.
Let them, like, do their thing for 5 years, and then it's time to drop it. I think after 5 years, you're good, right?
Yeah.
It's good, like...
Yeah.
So you have time to feel the beef, and then once it passes, you're just fucking... What started it, though?
What started it? So He didn't like that I use the F word in my songs.
Oh, okay.
And I explained to him, well, I was like, I don't use it in a derogatory way. I use it in an empowering way because growing up with the fucking voice I have, I was called the F word all the time. And people just were derogatory towards me my whole life. And then I wrote a song where I said, who's the F word now? And that's, I guess, what blew up his temper. But I explained to him in person that it was me. It was like a term of empowerment saying, like, all these people called me that, but what are you doing in your life now? Because you're working at the middle of the mall and I'm touring the world with my friends. Mm-hmm. It was nothing to do with sexuality. And it never was. It's just something that got misconstrued, because I think it's easy to kind of just poke at us and kind of pick out what you would like to pick out and hate us for whatever. But when you know the true context of it, it's kind of like, yeah, this was never said in an offensive way. But but long story short, I thought him and I squashed the beef day one of Warped Tour, because we met up, we hugged. I thought that was it. And then he talked about me on stage every day for 45 days.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Sick.
So it just turned into this massive fucking thing for no reason, because I thought we handled it, but whatever. It's long gone and done, and it's all good.
What year was that?
I love everyone. Probably 2015 or 2016, one of those years.
And you were known, especially on that tour, like, you were known as like one of the only band. First of all, there's a lot of bands on that fucking tour. You're one of the only guys getting up in the morning.
Yeah.
Getting breakfast with everyone, setting up the tent.
That's why Kevin Lyman wanted me to buy Warped Tour and take it over. He was like, you're the only band person I've ever seen that literally wakes up every single morning and gets breakfast and is setting up your tent at 8 a.m. There's not a single band member that does that. And I put my work ethic and my business above anything. So, I mean, I would party on Warped Tour. I would drink. I would hang out with everyone. But I would just make sure that, you know, I go to bed by 10 or 11, like, be responsible, like, wake up. I got to get my shit done. Like, I've got a family to provide for. I've got to sling my stay sick clothes and make shit happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I heard a saying, and it's part of sums up our life pretty much. If you want to hang out with the owls, you got to be willing to get up with the birds. And that's kind of like a punishment I'll do to myself.
I haven't heard that one. That's funny though.
This was recent, like maybe like 2 months ago. Someone told me that. Like, that's literally what I do. Because sometimes you hang out late, or like you go out. Even if you're going out for no drinks or drinks, like if I drink right now, I'm going to get up at a certain time, go to the gym, hungover, and punish myself. But you're still going to get work done. You have to. If you want to do this, well, you still got to do this. Doesn't mean go out at night and then, oh, wait, I won't get up early in the morning. Yeah. No. If you want to do this, you still have to do this. Especially, but the thing is, even more so, like, if you're a musician, you're already in, like, a lazy fucking group of people. So the fact that you can even party and then still get up in the morning, like, that sets you apart from a lot of, I'll say 95%.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
And that's why Kevin Lyman was shocked. He would just look at me like, you're a fucking animal. Because how are you doing this? And I'm like, I'm driven. Like, I've got to succeed. If I don't succeed, that's it. I've got a family, you know? Got shit to provide for, like, besides myself. So, I hustled my ass off on that tour. And it was great. It was good times. Mm-hmm. It was worth it.
Yeah, you know, just to start something new, like, you're going to eat shit for 2 years, 3 years, and finally, like, someone starts really, a lot of people start buying, like, you know, stay stick merch. Like, I'm almost fucking broke for 2-3 years, you know?
Yeah, no, I always tell people, like, because everyone, they see the success of something, but they don't see the hard work that you put in. But I always tell people, when I started Stay Sick Clothing, I ate shit for 2 years, and I didn't make any money. Like, nothing at all. And then, like, because I was so persistent and I never gave up or quit on it after 2 years, it was like, pew, pop off, blow up. So shit got big, and, you know, then it was just like, cool. It's because I stayed consistent. And that's the biggest thing I tell people when you're starting a business or a band or whatever, because a lot of people are like, why is my band not blowing up? And I'm like, all right, how long have you been a band? 1 year. I'm like, you know that Attila didn't make a single penny for like 7 years. Like, we started when I was 14, and I think I got the first penny when I was like 20 or 21. And I'll never forget that moment, because our tour manager handed me an envelope And I opened it and saw cash, and I handed it back to him. And I said, what the fuck is this? And he's like, you guys made money. And I'm like, you don't make money from being in a band. So why did you just hand me money? And he was like, yeah, you guys made money on this tour. Like, everything's paid. Here you go. And I was like, what the fuck? I got to get a bank account now? Like, what is this? Like, I was just playing music because I loved it.
Yeah.
I didn't know you made money, but people just have that reverse mentality where they're so heavily focused on money and success that they forget that it's all stemmed from passion. So if you don't have passion, persistence, perseverance, you're never going to get the money and the success.
Yes.
So you got to reverse your mindset and kind of go backwards with it.
It is a backwards way of thinking. It is. Like, let's say what gets you like the success or money, it's like a backwards way. Don't focus on it for a while and make sure your passion is fucking unlocked.
Focus on your passion and everything else will follow. If you're good at what you do and you're genuine and you're not lying or faking, you're going to succeed. It'll happen.
Agreed. What happened to the Big Six?
So the Big Six essentially it was turning, like, I thought it was just going to be like this like fun, like small studio project, and it was turning into something that was so like so many plans and so time consuming. And I just got way too caught up with a lot of things going on in my life, specifically Attila. I had a new baby. I started 4 LLCs this year. Like, I'm so busy with everything I'm doing. I don't have time to like full time commit. It's like having another girlfriend when you're already like, you're just already overwhelmed. Like,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. Me and Joe dropped out and they became something else.
Mm. That's it, huh? It's busy as fuck.
Yeah.
It's good. It seemed like a cool idea. Can I be honest with you? Okay, so
yeah.
When I saw the Big Six, I'm like, you're not going to include your boys over here? You're not going to include Eddie? Or come on.
Come on, man. Where's Eddie, man? Come on.
Put him in there.
I mean, it all just started because it was like half of the people in that photo, it was like half of us like in a room. They came to our Salt Lake City show and I was like kind of just like talking about shit and being like, yeah, man, like I've always wanted to have like a boy band, but like instead of like NSYNC, it's just all like deathcore screamers. And I was like, that'd be sick. And then Tyler was like, actually, like, I'm already like planning something like that. You want to be in it? And I'm like, yeah, duh. Cause like I already like have this same vision. So let's fucking run it. So yeah, that's it.
Isn't NSYNC back?
They are.
That's heavy, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
That's heavy as fuck.
Yeah, they're back, and Joey Fatone's my next door neighbor.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's my next door neighbor. So when I go on my bike ride every day, I ride my bike by his house.
You ever seen him outside chilling? Hey, what's up, dude?
Actually, no, and I'm surprised because I ride my bike a lot, and I've never fucking seen him. But we have a lot of mutual friends because. I mean, we live in the same fucking town, so.
Yeah, what made you move from Georgia to Florida?
So, I moved from Georgia to Florida when I was, like, 20, so it was when I was having my first son.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it just, Orlando seemed like a good place to raise a family. Mm-hmm. And my baby mom at the time has, had grown up around there. So, moved to Florida, and I love it. Also, I was born in Florida, so it was, like, I was born in South Florida near Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Lived there for like 2 years or so, 2 or 3 years. Grew up my whole life in Atlanta area where I was raised. And then I kind of went back and it just felt natural. I love Florida. Florida's my favorite state in the country. And I feel very at home there.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't know you were born there in Florida.
Yeah.
Shit. It's Wikipedia wrong again. God,
well, so being born in Florida is super rare, by the way. Like,
is it really?
Yeah, because, like, I mean, so let me just give you a statistic. When the pandemic started, I mean, we're in California right now. This was the most strict state during the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Florida.
It sucked.
We had our shutdown, and everyone abided and this and that. But then after our shutdown, every single business opened, and everyone could do whatever the fuck they wanted during the whole pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were locked down in California for, like, years, it felt like.
Yeah.
But for us, it was like
it sucked.
Every business was open. You could do anything you want it, like, I went to Daytona once, and there was people just, no one wore masks at ever. Like, no one in Florida was wearing masks. People were smoking cigs indoors. But the most fucked up thing is that this is where it's fucked. We had the least amount of COVID cases out of any state in the U.S. Like, there was barely any COVID in Florida, and we were the least restricted. Mm-hmm. Shit was wild. Fuck. I'm trying to remember what I was just going to say. A statistic. So since the pandemic happened, Florida is actually the most immigrated to state in all of the U.S. So there's...
Really?
Yeah. So just like immigrated, meaning not like international, but just within United States of America, Florida is the most immigrated state. Like, everyone immigrates to Florida, and our shit is blowing up. So like, it's cool if you own a home already. But for people trying to come to Florida, it's kind of fucked because like the prices are so damn high right now. So
especially after post-COVID, a lot of people are going to either Florida or like Austin, Texas.
Because like, think about it. People were stuck somewhere, and Florida ranked number one in domestic migration. So
wow.
Yeah, so everyone is coming to Florida. Yeah, dude. So Florida's blowing the fuck up because everyone's like, damn, like, my state's strict. Like, I want to live my life. Like, I want to do shit. I want to go have fun and run my business. And so everyone's just coming to Florida.
Number two in international.
Wild. Yeah.
That is really wild.
Thank goodness I got my home in 2015. If not, there's no fucking way I'd be able to afford that shit. Everything's blowing up.
Well, Franz, you're always a forward thinker. You know, and people don't know about your band is you guys kind of blew up on your fifth record, which is odd.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
Very odd.
Obviously, when we were hanging out, that was like, you're kind of at the last of your fourth record.
Yep.
I want to say, and just, I'm going to be honest. So I love you. I love Spencer from Iceland Kills. I watch Iceland Kills. This band fucking sucks. And you guys, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And to see your two bands just grow into what you guys work hard for, it is unreal.
Yeah.
It is unreal, dude. To see like this, I saw it for a month. I'm like, this is kind of not the sickest. But Mitch saw something in you and Spencer as well. I'm like, but you guys became your bands.
Yeah.
How was like, because Chris joins in 2008, and it seems there's a shift there. What was like, was there a switch? Because obviously that tour was in 2012, and then About That Life drops 2013 early.
Yeah, I would say like, honestly, what just happened was we were recording with Joey Sturgis when Joey Sturgis was like, you know, like the guy you had to go to.
Yeah.
And we recorded with Joey Sturgis. Our first album with him was when he still lived in Connersville, Indiana, which is the middle of bumfuck nowhere, like absolute, like the nearest Starbucks is like an hour and a half away type shit. Wild. But then Joey Sturgis for About That Life, when we recorded with him, he started getting like some fucking money. So he rented a mansion in Detroit, which... It's Detroit, so a man. I mean, it's not that expensive to get a mansion there. No offense, but I mean, at least not in 2000, like fucking, you know, 12 or 13 when we recorded. But
yeah,
he had a mansion in Detroit, so it was kind of like it was the height of when Attila was at our craziest, like as people, like we were just crazy fucking people. But also, we got sent to a mansion.
Oh my goodness!
So we're in this like gangster mansion. and we're also at our peak like party phase where we're just wild as shit. And so About That Life is just a product of like so much like crazy, I don't know, drugs, alcohol, you name it, like everything was happening. And we were just grinding and recording and making whatever the fuck we wanted. And no one could tell us anything. Like we just were there like unapologetically raw. And then About That Life was born. Is that it, wow. It makes sense when you think about it, you know? put some crazy fucking like wild dudes from Atlanta in a mansion in Detroit and give us like unlimited access to all this crazy shit. And we're just like, yeah,
that's sick as fuck.
About that life. Let's fucking go. Like, we're like, let's just be crazy. So like what we were living in real life was actually like being portrayed through the album.
Hmm. What was like, what was the writing process for that particular record?
I don't remember anything.
Really?
No, dude.
Wow. Are you serious?
No, dude.
That's sick.
Yeah. Dude, okay. I remember nothing. Okay. We were partying too hard.
Do you think, I personally believe this, I think there's an element that people don't like about some music that it's just part of like the ingredient to make music that people love.
Yeah.
Like you need like out of control people.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, and we were out of control. I know that we did have a lot of the music pre-pro in advance, which mm-hmm. we did in Atlanta. But yeah, no, we were just wild and we would improv shit. Like we would like Middle Fingers Up. We wrote Middle Fingers Up with a deck of cards.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
What so, do you mean?
Basically, you would take out like a certain number of cards and keep like face cards and keep like cards like 1 through 4 or something. And what you would do is you would randomly draw a card. We would each pick one out. And like a jack would be a bend, like a bow. And then like a king would be like a slide or something. And then like a 1 would be like a dent. And then a 3 would be a dent. So we just drew cards and threw the cards on the floor, and then that's how Middle Fingers Up was written. We just drew cards.
What?
I don't. No one's ever known that, actually. It's pretty cool.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. We made a song with a deck of cards.
Whose idea was that?
I think it was Joey's idea.
The deck of cards.
Yeah.
So the jack was a wow.
Yeah, like one certain face cards would be like a wow or like a bow or like a, you know, or like a boo. Each card represented a different thing. And then obviously like the That's number sick. Cards would be like dent, 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 dent. But we would have to follow the cards. So we each just got to pick out a card and create a song.
Wow.
And it's one of our biggest songs ever.
It
we
is.
Just wrote it with a deck of cards.
What happened to your band? Because it seems like from the outside, because like from experience, like a certain type of lifestyle is not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, out of nowhere, it kind of seems like you came out with this EP and like it felt like a new band.
Yeah.
It was like, what... Did something happen? Was there a talk? Was like you guys, some of you guys got a more straight head on your shoulders? Like what? What happened?
A lot of that. So Attila's been unsigned for probably like 4 or 5 years now. Hmm. And essentially, our guitarist, Chris, is one of like the best rock producers in the world right now. He's fucking phenomenal. Everything he touches turns to gold. So,
mm-hmm.
We started self-producing, so now we just write music with ourselves. And so when I say change of style, you have to keep in mind, we have an EP out. We've got like 4 or 5 songs out, but we have like 20 more songs in the chamber. So we have, we have like 2 of the heaviest deathcore songs ever right now. Like, but we haven't dropped those yet. We're kind of keeping those in the chamber. We're kind of keeping those in the chamber because, like, since we're releasing these songs where I'm actually doing clean singing on the choruses, we're kind of waiting for people to, like, talk even more shit and be like, fuck, this is not heavy. So that way we could just, like, double blast them with, like, a shotgun to the face and be like, all right, here's the deathcore songs.
This is, might be where you want the reaction, but you're not going to get it because people actually are loving this stuff. It took you a career. It feels like people are starting to come around and like respect the time.
Yeah.
And like this came out and it's like people are talking about you like a other band. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. It's like we're a different band with the same name. But yeah, like it comes down to just us maturing. We're all older now. Like I said about that life, we were crazy, like doing drugs, wild shit, whatever, blah, blah, blah. That was very real to what we were doing. Now we're mature. Like we're all in our 30s. Like we've got kids and shit. Like we're not, I'm not going to sing about like fucking orgies and drugs because I'm not doing any of that shit anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not authentic. So everything I'm singing about now is authentic, but also we're self-producing. We have no one telling us what to do or trying to force us to be a certain way. Yeah. So we're doing music that to us is 100% authentic. And for the first time in our career, we're getting a lot of recognition from people we didn't think we would. Like,
interesting.
XM Octane Radio. We're played like 5-6 times a day on Octane Radio. It's fucking nuts. Like that's Jose nuts, Mangan loves us, and it's like we've been a band forever, but now we're finally catching people's attention in a different way. And
that's what's
we're getting all the Danny Wimmer festivals, like, which we've gotten a couple in the past, but now we're getting all of them, which is something I'm super thankful for, because when it comes down to it, I would say no one's ever believed in Attila except for
Attila
us. Yeah. But now, like, Danny Wimmer, Jose Mangan, the whole team at Octane, like, they believe in us, and it's cool to finally have someone that believes in us.
So it was just Chris producing and maybe putting in more time, maybe it's more focus. Like, what?
I mean, Chris is a full-time producer. That's his full-time gig now. Like, when he's not when he's not on tour with us, like right now, he's producing full time. The second he lands in Atlanta, he's getting right back on a plane. Or sorry, the tour ends in Atlanta, but the second the tour is over, he's going on a plane and coming right back to LA to the studio in LA that him and Tyler Carter are starting.
That's great.
He's just going to be recording nonstop. Like that's all he does is record and produce.
That's sick. Well, Franz, unfortunately, I have limited time, so I got to ask you what are some regrets in your career?
Ooh. Damn, that's a deep one. No one's ever asked me what my regrets are. I feel like my answers might offend people.
Well, you're at the one place where you probably say that.
I really like our album Chaos, but I think it came out at the wrong time. I think that should have been later down the road. So it's not like I regret that. I think it's a phenomenal album. I think it was just wrong place, wrong time.
It happens, dude. Sucks.
You know, I mean, it does happen. Like, not to call you out, but you've had a Suicide Silence album where you probably felt that way.
Of course, yeah.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong mindset.
Like, I love this album, and I think it's cool, but wrong place, wrong time. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. But other than that, I would say I don't really have any regrets at all in Attila's career, because it's, you know, life is waves. Like, there's no such thing as just this. You're not going to just fucking go up forever. Life is waves. You're going to go like this.
It is.
It's just, are you strong enough to withstand the waves and keep fucking rocking? And we are.
100%.
So here we are.
Some waves are, sometimes you get fucking battered by a crazy wave. You're like, fuck, how am I going to get out of this one?
Yeah.
And then you do. It's weird.
Yeah.
And you got to respect people that have gone through the wave, dude.
Yeah.
You know, because so many times you just want to quit. So
that's the thing. Most people do quit. They get beaten down by a wave and they're going down and they're just like, fuck it, done. But you can't quit. If you don't fucking quit, you'll never lose. Got to keep going forever.
Damn it. That is true.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. Well, Franz, it was great to, I wish I have more time, but when's your set time?
I play at 9:40. What time is it? It's 8:33.
That's sick as fuck. make it in time.
Yeah, no, I'll make it in time. Yeah, no, I could just like talk forever. I'm just, you know, I'm that dude.
Yeah. Well, Franz, I never asked this before. Any closing thoughts?
Any closing thoughts? I would just say, Love you and Suicide Silence. Hopefully we can tour together again soon.
Let's do it.
That'd be great. Closing thoughts, I would say just be on the lookout for new Attila music because we have so much new material and it does, a lot of it is super heavy. It's all over the place. It's really just a big mix of music, but be on the lookout for new Attila music. And it looks like next year in 2024, we're going to do a co-headliner with Born of Osiris in the US. So, and probably also in Europe. So be on the lookout and come see us because we're always on tour. We play every city in the world. Oh yeah, there's our Instagram. Give us a follow. We're friendly people. Come say hi. And yeah, that's probably about it.
The misunderstood Franz.
The misunderstood Franz.
Well, have us safe rest of the tour. And it's good to see you, man.
Yeah. All right, good man. To see you, man. All right. Thank you.
All right, everyone. That's it. Later.